This FPL season has definitely been go, go, go. A nonstop hustle all the time. Matches, deadlines, unexpected blank and double game weeks, on top of everything the real world has had in store. Sometimes you need a moment to turn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. For me personally, supporting Fulham during this last year has been a true roller coaster ride. Honestly, when that Adama Traore goal flew past Areola in the 92nd minute of game week 31, the only thing that saved my mental state, the only thing that calmed my nerves, was cracking open a Coors Light. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. The mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. That way, you always know when it's time to chill. When you need to hit reset, just open a Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. And listen, everyone, summer is pretty much here. It's about to get hot in New York. An ice-cold Coors Light is such a perfect way for me to beat that summertime heat. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light and the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
Cheaters, and welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League podcast. My name is Tom. I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
Oh my God, I am so fantastic. Tom Campbell is here on the Always Cheating podcast. I don't think anyone else in the world calls you the FPL mayor, as Josh and I have dubbed you so. But to us on Always Cheating, you're the FPL mayor. It's Tom Campbell. You can find Tom on Twitter at UtterlyTC. You've been a longtime friend of the pod, longtime Patreon supporter. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much for having me, Brandon. I'm really excited to be here. I was really surprised when I got your message asking me to step in, but you know, absolutely delighted to hopefully come and help you guys out. You know, I've been a long time fan, so this is great for me.
Fantastic. Yeah, Josh is traveling for work, so we needed a guest co-host. Tom, you're stepping in. Just so everyone out there knows a little bit more about your background, give us the quick and dirty bio. Where do you live? Who's your club? How long you've been playing FPL and so on?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so accent's probably given it away, but I'm from England. I live in Bristol in the southwest of England. But I'm a West Ham fan, so I was born just outside of London and grew up supporting West Ham. So it's cost me a few years, I guess, a couple of relegations, and yeah. Always fun though. And fantasy Premier League wise, I've been playing like I think it's 10 years now, an awfully long time. I think sort of taking it really, really seriously has been more sort of the last six or seven seasons, including this one. It's become a big part of my life, as I'm sure it has most of your listeners listening in today. I love it. I can't get enough of it.
I would highly encourage everyone out there to give Tom a follow on Twitter, because you're kind of known in the FPL community for your match of the day wrap-ups.
That's right.
So yeah. Are you doing the match of the day challenge when you do those wrap-ups, or have you followed the results and then you watch match of the day and on Twitter you post these really succinct, eloquent summaries of how each team and various FPL players rate?
Yeah, that's so it's weird how it came about. So a good friend of mine at work sort of used to whinge to me that he wasn't able to watch Match of the Day. You know, he's a parent of two small children and, you know, just not practical to get the time to watch that. So it's like, oh, you know, I used to spend Monday mornings recounting, what I'd found from watching this from a fantasy perspective, because he loves his fantasy Premier League. So I was actually like, oh, do you know what? With the demographic that he had, then there's probably heaps of people out there who are in the same boat. So yeah. I started to do it. And like you say, they are succinct and concise. My style of writing is really verbose. So it's actually a good challenge for me to have to try and keep it short, because you're only allowed four pictures when you attach photos to a tweet. So to summarize, typically, you know, seven or eight games into four pictures is an interesting challenge to try, and to try and do that whilst, you know, keeping it FPL related is a good challenge. But yeah, you're right. People seem to really appreciate those. And, you know, right now I don't have any kids, but I do appreciate the fact that, you know, people want to know this stuff. And that's one of the things that I loved about Always Cheating, is the fact that you and Josh, it was so evident to me listening in that you guys watch a heap of football. And uh-huh. You know, you guys get the opportunity to watch more live games, I would say, than we do in the UK, because
the NBC broadcast here in the States allows us access to all Premier League matches.
That's
I know is a luxury.
It is. I guess the counter here is in the UK, the fans can go to those games, and that's what they want to encourage.
That seems better to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those trade-offs, isn't it? But the fact is that you guys were able to watch this, and I love that. Like, I'm a true stats geek, as I'm sure you'll know, mm-hmm. and a majority of my followers will know as well. But there's just no substitute for watching games and coming to your own conclusions.
Yes.
If you can marry that up with kind of stats analysis, then, you know, all the better. But I also liked that within your show, I hope you don't mind me saying, but I think you keep it on the kind of the brass tacks of what fantasy is. It's you and Josh will talk about minutes played, goals, assists, clean sheets, watching games, and you won't kind of deviate too much and get too much under the bonnet, because you know whilst that stuff's important, it has to actually render some returns for it to mean anything in the fantasy game. And I thought that was really refreshing as well, to have that. So you kind of married the two of watching a whole heap of games with the actual elements that score your players' points. It was like, these guys are putting something out there that I can really get behind. So,
talking about looking under the bonnet, I am definitely cut from the cloth of open up the hood of that car, look at the engine. I'm the one that just stands there with his arms folded and nods in agreement, not having any idea what I'm looking at. So,
definitely right there with you. If I can get my bonnet open, that's a job well done, right?
Okay, so what we're going to talk about coming up, we're going to recap our game week 29 scores. We have a few rants. I don't know if you saw what Pogba did this week, but
we're going to dive
a little bit into that. We are going to then steer our focus to, of course, the blanks in game week 31. The next game week coming up is game week 30, but we are game week 30 is sadly just a stepping stone into full on chip mode. So we're going to talk about teams and players that we want to highlight ahead of the blanks in 31 and 33. Then, of course, the lightning round and your questions all sprinkled in. Quickly, before we get started, just a shout out to our friend Kurt Baker. He lives in Norway and he works for this app that many of you may have heard of or use, FootMob, FOTMOB. And I got a great message from Kurt pointing out that FootMob, an app that you can get for your iPhone and Android, if you go to any Premier League match in the pitch view, it now displays FPL points for all those players. So FootMob, it offers one of those sort of one-stop shop apps where you can get scores from every league around the world, follow particular players. I thought it was just a great feature that FootMob added recently. So check that out if you have an opportunity. All right, game week 29. We're recording this podcast, Tom. This is about 8:30 London time after the Merseyside Derby. Bonus points had just come in. Where did you finish on the week?
I had pretty much about as average a week as I've had in a long time. So I've hit 43 points on the game week, which, you know, isn't any great shakes, but I'm not too despondent about it because it doesn't feel like there's been a heap of movement, and it feels like some people have had some absolutely rotten luck with captaincy.
Yeah. I should add that it looks like the estimated average overall for points was 41, and if you're in the top 1K, about 45 points average. So you're right in there.
Average. So it feels like a sort of treading water. So I made a horrible transfer, which I really regret now, which I can talk about if you'd like me to afterwards. But I had Captain
Tom,
Salah.
Tom, the floor is yours.
So just briefly. So I had two free transfers going into this game week, and it was one of those situations where I didn't have an immediate move that I wanted to make for this game week, but kind of thinking, well, there's blank game weeks upcoming, and do I want to use one of those to kind of prepare for that? So in the end, I decided that I would take the risk and take out a player who's playing in game week 31, Lucas Dean, and replace him with another one who's playing in 31. So I was never going to start Dean in the Merseyside derby and wasn't intending to start him in 30 either. So I was like, okay, not too worried I'll be losing out on any points. And brought in, I think it's pronounced Shar, the Newcastle centre half who scored that.
We'll go with that, Shar. Somebody on the Slack suggested Cher, as in the legendary Believe singer.
That's right. Yeah, I'm not entirely sure of the pronunciation, but I don't think always cheating is massively fussed on correct pronunciation of
names. We don't care, Tom. Now,
correct me if I'm wrong, but yeah. So I drafted him in, and he returned a zero pointer, and is now he was hooked on 64 minutes. He's now been booked again, which leaves him one yellow card away from a 2-game suspension. So my gamble has backfired pretty catastrophically there. And moreover, it actually stopped me from potentially, if I played him, then I would have actually got Robert Snodgrass subbing on with 6 points. So it kind of backfired horrendously. But in terms of the actual game week score, it's 43 points, clean sheet from Edison, who's quietly been doing me a great job back there. Van Dijk, I thought, was imperious today. It was just such a
man of the match, without a
just
doubt. I agree.
Absolutely outstanding display. So good. Robertson, a few returns there. Jimenez is, I presume, in everyone's team. But other than that, it was a captaincy on Mo Salah, and move on to the next one, I guess. And how about you? How did you fare?
I fared decently. I ended up burning 4 points, and I did a double Chelsea move. I dropped. Let's see. I finally got rid of Leroy Sané, who has just been a curse on my team for the last 5 weeks. Gone for Hazard, and Higuain came in for Aguero. I was shocked to see that Aguero got the start on the weekend against Bournemouth, and I was really fearful that he was going to punish me. So I did get away with murder there.
And not only starting, but playing the full 90 as well.
I know. So it's hard. It's hard to know what that means for next weekend, game week 30, but I think if you still have Aguero, maybe you try to hold him a little bit longer and move him out ahead of game week 31. He's heavily favored. So to see Jesus back on the pitch, it just makes it a little more complicated. But
trading or selling Aguero before that home game to Watford is going to be really difficult to do.
Yeah.
I think anyone is, you can apply any kind of logic that you like, but that's going to take some bravery, I guess, to pull the trigger on that move. I don't think I'll be looking at doing that personally.
Yeah. I mean, Jimenez, I was going to mention when you brought up Jimenez, perish the thought, if anything happens to Raul and he ascends to heaven, he will have to duke it out with Sorloth to be a lord.
The lord,
He's just been having a sensational FPL season. And, the water is wet award is going to Raul yet again. I put the armband on Pogba, which segues us nicely into the rants of the week. And, it's my rant. Pogba, he decimated a lot of people's souls when it looked like it was just going to be a run-of-the-mill blank captaincy. Pogba on 2 points, but it wasn't going to be that big of a mess, given that Raheem Sterling, the biggest, most popular captain, was also blanking, though on 3 points. Then Pogba steps up to take this penalty at the very end of the match. And I remember Andy, Let's Talk FPL, tweets, this could be huge. And of course, Andy meant this could be huge and that anyone who armbanded Pogba is going to skyrocket in rank. It turned out to be huge, but in the complete opposite way. I mean, a couple minutes after he misses that pen, he gets a yellow card. So instead of it's effectively, I think, a net loss if you're captaining Pogba of 12 points. Yeah. But let me put a positive spin on this. And I'll be interested to get your take, Tom. It's not as if those game weeks in which Aguero or Salah hat tricks and you haven't captained him, or you don't even have that player in your team, and then there is a swing of upwards of 20 points. Mm-hmm. You only ended up with -2 on Pogba, whereas all of the other big captainers probably on six. So it could be only as much as an 8-point swing. I think it could have been a lot worse. I hope that a lot of people can just take it as a bad beat and move on. Who did you captain this week?
Yeah, I definitely concur with that. It's so much easier to swallow when it's you have a bad captaincy choice, or not even a bad choice, but it doesn't work out for you, when the other highly captained players don't return significantly. It just makes it so much easier to bear, because ultimately your rank's not being impacted as significantly as it could have been.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I captained Mo Salah this week, so that's 6 points in total. Sterling was likewise. Pogba, yes, it's a negative score, but really, I mean, if Sterling goes for a brace and Salah does too, and Pogba just gets that one, probably the net difference is going to be comparable, right? So it's easy to be philosophical, or easier to be philosophical about it, I think, when the heavily captained players don't return well. That said, we're on game week 29 now, and I think the FPL folks who are taking the game really seriously, I think a lot of them are just like, this is another gut punch in a season of gut punches, and it's probably just that cumulative effect of, God, how much more of this is going to happen before either this season just peters out, or I finally get a change of luck. And I think it's probably more that people are struggling with, and I completely sympathize, because it's pretty horrible when it continually goes against you.
Yeah, I feel like you've been seeing more and more why I'm leaving FPL messages this season. And then this week, and that Pogba thing was kind of the cherry on top. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting segue into talking about dead teams. On our Slack channel, Juan raised an interesting issue. He says, regarding FPL engagement, according to @FPL statistics, 49.1% of all FPL teams are, quote, inactive. They have not made transfers in 5 or more game weeks. Question to you, Tom. Do you think the game needs to change in order to improve engagement levels? And Juan also brings up the World Cup game that had different rules and more flexibility and ways to actually alter your team in the midst of a, quote, game week. So, yeah, we're mostly the 50% that's still active, according to these rules of transfers in the last 5 game weeks. We're still present. Do you think there's an issue with engagement with FPL?
Yeah. So I don't, personally. I think that percentage looks pretty damning, but I have a feeling that that's going to have been pretty consistent year on year. And actually, if you look at the total number of teams, I think right now it's like 6.2 million. So you're talking about 3.1 million or over that teams that are engaged. And actually, I think if you were to reflect that season on season, that's actually an upward trend in engagement. I do expect the percentage will probably remain relatively similar year on year, but I think any attempt that they make to bring engagement in will actually be to the detriment of people who take the game seriously, which is like the folks listening to this show, because it's going to be things like enabling people to reset their teams or to make wholesale changes on a more frequent or regular basis, which is kind of exactly
essentially bringing VAR to FPL, Tom.
Oh God, don't! I mean, this whole weekend has kind of made, I've watched a lot of games, as you can imagine, and I've just sort of thought, fast forward to next season when VAR is in, and how different this whole conversation would have been with all of these decisions. We probably wouldn't have even been able to podcast right now, because the VAR decisions would probably still be ongoing, but it's going to be,
maybe going to Parliament right now. Yeah,
that's it. Yeah. But for me, to go back to Juan's question, I think you look at that stat and you're like, oh my God, half of the teams are dead teams in effect. But I actually think that that's always going to be the case. I always think you're going to see that amount of people, I think, will typically have down tools by this stage of the season.
If
you actually look at the number of people playing, it is going up, and that's cool.
Yeah. And that's what I wanted to touch upon too, is the number of people in the game, or the number of teams that the FPL site quantifies, 6.2 million. Mm-hmm. thinking about the global audience of the Premier League and the access, the free access to this fantasy game, it is staggering that only 6.2 million teams have been logged in this game. So for me, I think it's less an issue of engagement with the game that the Premier League has. It's more an issue of we just need more fans playing
exposure.
The game. And I think that that will come. And the more that the fantasy game is exposed and becomes popular, the more people will play. And then as just even as you're saying, the 50% inactive teams may remain the same, we'll still have many, many more active teams.
So speaking of, you know, fans and being engaged, I'm a loyal patron of yours and Josh's, and would encourage anyone listening to do that. But have you guys had any signups this week? Any new people join the fun?
Tom, your segue game is on point tonight. I love
this. We won't tell the listeners how many takes that took, but
we have some new signups on our Patreon supporters page. So a big thank you to our new supporters, Jimmy Norlin, Isaac Enskog, Ben Crudgington, Sean Laurie, Alex Turton, Thomas Evans, Oscar Gavert, and Aftab Muhammad. Thanks, guys, and sorry for butchering any names there. Of course, our Patreon page, visit patreon.com/alwayscheating to learn more about what that actually is, what that means. But basically, it's just a way to support what Josh and I do, and now what Tom does full time, or say thank you. And we try to give you some good stuff in return. One of the things that our supporters receive is an exclusive podcast stream where you get a bonus podcast each week, including our Q&A kitchen table sessions. You get access to our private Slack discussion forum, other cool swag like t-shirts and whatnot. So Tom, you've been a loyal Patreon supporter since like right around the time we first launched the page. Yeah. So I'm going to tack your name onto this list after Aftab Muhammad and say thank you, Tom Campbell, for your support.
No worries. I just think it's a cool community. Like, I do use the Slack channel, probably not as frequently as some of your other patrons as well, but no, I really would encourage people to get amongst it if they can. And I love the new Kitchen Table Sessions podcast that you guys are doing each week. It's cool because a lot of this information becomes so quickly outdated, doesn't it, with the nature of a week-on-week game.
It does.
It just gives you guys the opportunity to sort of take stock after a few days of new information. So, come and join in, guys.
Fantastic. Thanks, Tom. All right. No Super League update this week. The game is still updating, but of course, it's never too late to join the greatest FPL mini league on the planet. Just go to alwayscheating.com and click the league tab. And one last shout out to Stephen Toomey, who won our Patreon supporters Survivor League. I wanted to give him a shout out closer to the top of this week's pod. And also Brian Moss, who was the runner up. Those two guys took it the distance with our Survivor League. So congrats, Stephen. All right, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back and talk a little bit about planning for game weeks 31 and 32, the blanks. What's our strategy? Which players are we targeting? And we'll take it from there. All right, we're back, and Tom and I are here to talk about game week 31, game week 32 planning. I am part of the mass outfit of people strategizing for piling up on players who will play in game weeks 31 and 33 with all the blanks. I'm going to free hit in 32 and just hope that I have a decent team that fields again in 33 and then wild card in 34. So we're going to try and make this chat interesting for people who are playing that strategy, maybe a slightly different chip strategy. If you don't have your chips, it's still important to understand, I think, how we think about these teams that are playing in game weeks 31 and 33. I mean, mainly Liverpool and Chelsea. I think I'm really feeling Newcastle right now. So we'll talk a little bit more about Newcastle. So in terms of strategy, how many players do you think you're going to get out for 31, Tom? And on top of what your team's going to look like for 31, what type of chip strategy are you focusing on?
Yeah, so it sounds like you and I are going to be looking to use the same strategy, Brandon. So my plan has been for a while to free hit in double game week 32 after kind of doing my best to stockpile players for 31 and hopefully have enough of those players, of that contingent of players, to carry over and be part of the Game Week 33 squad before then reset the deck in Game Week 34 with my wild card, and then with a view to bench boosting in 35. So it feels like that's, Mike, a fairly typical strategy. It's definitely not the only one. I wouldn't say you need to get wedded to that at all.
Let me just jump in, Tom. Let me just jump in and explain why we think that that is a great strategy. Mm-hmm. And I think generally we like this strategy because the double game weeks, 32 and 35, traditionally in FPL, the double game weeks have the biggest upside, the highest ceiling, the best opportunity for you to improve your overall rank. So this strategy of a free hit in 32, which means you get to have a bespoke squad just for that week, and wildcarding ahead of game week 35 and 34, again, kind of tailoring a squad for the double and 35. That's the idea.
Yeah.
And I'm of the belief that these blanks in 31 and 33, we want to try and play them as best we can, but there's just, I believe, going to be a lower point ceiling, and I don't think we want to screw up our team just for these game weeks.
Totally agree. I actually had an analogy for this, right? So I love an analogy when it comes to anything, really, but fantasy football, I think it works quite well as well. So I think of the wild card as being comparable with moving house, right? You're just done. You're going to completely change your location. You're going to change the type of house, furniture, where you live, everything, right?
New friends, new job, the whole deal.
The whole lot. Like, the world is your oyster. You can decide you can change every part of that completely, right?
Okay.
It doesn't need to bear any resemblance to it, right? The free hit, I think, is more comparable to going on holiday, vacation, right? You can still choose to go anywhere that you like. You can forget about work and all your troubles, and you can go to the Seychelles for 2 weeks or one game week. But you know what? You need to be mindful of the fact that you're going to be returning to that house, you know? So just make sure you haven't left it in too much disarray when you come back.
You have put the most positive spin I can imagine on this discussion. We are not talking about blanks and doubles. We are planning a vacation.
Exactly.
This is tremendous.
And you would want a vacation when, you know, that you can go to the Seychelles or St. Lucia, right? In the blank game weeks. It's like you've got such a small pot. It's like, I don't know, Skegness or something. It's not quite as appealing. So maybe I've taken the analogy a little bit too far, but for me,
you're becoming a travel agent as we speak.
Yeah. I just sort of think that the double game weeks, it just offers that super high ceiling. And with you being able to set that up, especially after what will be an international set of games where there's going to be heaps of information over that period about who's fit, who's not and stuff, you're going to have the ability to tailor that squad right up until the moment before the gaming to make it as powerful as you can for what promises to be a high ceiling. So that's why I'm doing it personally.
Terrific. In terms of so let's talk about go ahead.
I was just gonna say, you asked about how many players I'm gonna get out. I mean, if I wasn't able to make any transfers from now until 31, best case is I would have 8 players playing. I've got 8 playing players in my squad who have games in 31. But that's a little misleading because it's got things like Shah, like I mentioned, is one yellow from suspension. I've also got DeAndre Yedlin, who I feel really like shafted by. He's been dropped after 9
True
consecutive
starts. Bait and switch,
You know, I played 90 in all but one of them, I think, and then 14 games before that run. And now they were so poor against West Ham in their last game that maybe Manquillo now gets dropped and he comes back in, so certainly can't transfer him out now. So case of 8, but Rob Snodgrass is one of them as well, and he's kind of in and out of the squad. He seems to play well when he's selected, and he's got great dead ball delivery. He's got an assist in each of his last 2 starts, but was benched and didn't come on in the intervening fixture, so he's another problem. So if I made no transfers, it would be 8. I do have in effect 3 transfers to make before 31 because I've got 2 frees now. So, if I didn't transfer any of them out, then it would be a best case of 11. But I think it's reasonable to say that I'll field a shortened squad in terms of number of people. But it's going to be a decent enough number, I feel like, to cover that selection of fixtures. How about you?
Yeah, I'm in the same position here. Right now I have 9 players, but I have a few flags. Mm-hmm. Balbuena, he's not fit right now. Phil Billing, looks like he's gotten his spot back after coming back from injury, but he's a Huddersfield midfielder. I'm not expecting anything from that. So it's not going to be a powerhouse starting 9 for me, if it in fact is 9. But with 2 free transfers for me between now and game week 31, I'm hopeful that I have at least a strong 9 that I can roll out. And I'll feel pretty good about that.
Definitely.
And so let's talk about some of these possible vacation destinations we can go to. Who are we targeting? A couple questions from the community. Jabron Chada asks, who are some non-Chelsea Liverpool midfielders to target for game week 31 and 33? And Milan Dobrychuk asks, your ideal realistic team for blank 31. So we're just going to go down the list of teams that do play in 31 and 33, and we can just give our brief thoughts on the star players there, the team form generally. First, Chelsea. Chelsea really came to the fore this week. Mm. People are buying into the hype around Gonzalo Higuain, Hazard. People have short-term memories, I guess, and they've forgotten of all the abuse that Hazard gave us at the midpoint of the season. But he's looking like a really decent premium midfielder. Chelsea play Everton away in 31, and then they are home West Ham in game week 33. Football Fever asks, which Chelsea players should we plan to get for the blank game weeks? I'm torn between Hazard and David Luiz versus Higuain and Azpilicueta. Did you watch the West London Derby today, Fulham, Chelsea? What did you make of the squad?
I didn't catch all of the game, but from what I saw, I mean, you weren't expecting much of a new manager bounce with Scotty Parker coming in. Scotty Parker's a bit of a hero of mine, being a West Ham fan. He kept us in the league successfully once. And it was just he did end up going to Spurs, but we won't dwell on that. But I mean, there was an improved level of performance there. He can't eradicate defensive mistakes from that squad. Mm-hmm. He's not a miracle worker, but I did like how Chelsea played, especially down the right-hand side. I seem to notice that Azpilicueta, who's, as bad as reliable an FPL defensive pick as we've had in the last few seasons, I've had a look. He's actually getting 6.5 points over his last 4 game weeks in terms of points, and that's including a -1 return in when they got hammered by Man City 6-0. So, 12 clean sheets on the season so far, 5 assists and 3 in the past 4 game weeks. I really like him as a pick, but I also like how he is interacting with Willian or Pedro, because Pedro played the last game down the right-hand side, and how those two guys seem to have a bit of an understanding now with Higuain, who's a player I've always admired. I think I was so excited when he came to the league. I'm not totally convinced he's in the best shape that he's ever been in his career, but
he has a dad bod for sure. He has a dad head as well.
He does, but his movement around the box, in terms of just to create space for getting shots at goal, is, I was going to say unparalleled. That's probably not true, but it is impressive. And he had one shot that was really well saved by Sergio Rico, which is probably the first time that's been said on this podcast.
But, yes, it is.
And then another one that went over the bar. So I really like the relationship between Azpi and his midfield contingent, and how those guys are interacting with Higuain. I mean, what do you think about Hazard as well, Brandon? You've brought him in now. I think for me, he's an exposure point for me. Like, I would feel really at risk if I didn't own him going into 31. And that's just the nature of Eden Hazard, right? He's this enigma.
I experienced quite a tumble in overall rank in January, largely thanks to riding Hazard through 5 straight blanks when everyone else was getting points from Sterling and Sané. I have ill will toward Hazard, but it kind of speaks to the I don't know if it's so much opportunity with Hazard more than it is there are no other options. Mm-hmm. I am gambling on not going for Sterling. Like Josh, he also burned 4 this week, and he brought in Higuain and he brought in Sterling for the hope of some short-term gains. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a good move, but I decided to risk it and just go for Hazard and play the blank game weeks.
Yeah.
I don't think that he's going to bury everyone in the blanks. But I do think that despite all the anxiety around him, he's a great option for
Definitely.
Those blanks.
And we need to remember as well, the game in 30 Wolves at home is actually a pretty enticing fixture as well with Wolves. Yes. Yeah. I mean, they played quite well in the league game that's just gone in game week 29. But before that, there seems to be a focus, in my view, understandably, to prioritize the cup a little bit. So I think that's actually a really nice fixture for the Chelsea guys as well in 30. So, no, I like the move. Yeah. And in terms of 31, I think you're going to want at least one of those two premium assets in your squad, Higuain and Hazard. And I think if I was free hitting in that week, I mean, I actually did mock up what my squad would look like if I was doing that, and both of them were there. So I think that probably speaks volumes that, you know, they are two key players to focus on as we go into this blank game week period, especially as they've got that 33 fixture that you mentioned as well.
Yeah, for me, this Chelsea squad for the game weeks upcoming is a no half measures squad, in that I'm not interested in gambling on the likes of Pedro or Willian. No. I think it's Hazard, Higuain, both of them or either of them, or no one else. Maybe a defender. And this will actually lead us into some Liverpool talk, because I mean, I think of all of the defenses, Chelsea does look relatively appealing. I think David Luiz, he was rested against Fulham, and I do think that it was just rest. It wasn't some sort of there isn't anything else going on between him and Sarr is my best guess. So that he'll be back and ready for that home Wolves match in game week 30. He's very affordable in terms of the rest of the players in that back line. If you stack him up next to the likes of Alonso and Azpilicueta, that makes David Luiz more appealing. But
it does, yeah.
If I think about the remaining transfers that I have, the free ones, just two, and then I look at my back line, I have Lascelles, I have I'm doubled up on Liverpool. I don't know that I even need or have room for a Chelsea defender. So I just don't know how high a priority it is, and I'm prioritizing Chelsea's attack more than their defense.
Yeah, I totally concur with that assessment. I think, if you were free-hitting, you could maybe make more of a case for a Chelsea defender being part of your starting 11. But if you're doing the strategy that we're advocating for and using just the free transfers, you're absolutely right, because it's a given that managers are going to have three Liverpool players going into their game against Fulham in 31. Mm-hmm. You and I have both doubled up on Liverpool defenders already, who will hopefully start that game. So there's no way that you'd transfer either of them out in place of a Chelsea defender. And we've just sort of said about Newcastle also having a good defensive, recent defensive record, and West Ham play Huddersfield. So it's a hard one to justify spending the type of money that you have to outlay to get a Chelsea defender into your team, unless you're using your free hit chip.
Okay, so Liverpool, Jeff Petter asks, for game week 31, if you have Rabo and Salah, and we're going to put a pin in that, we're going to come back to Salah, is a defensive double up, either Trent or VVD pairing with Robertson, a better option, or an attacking double up with Mane and Salah? This one seems pretty easy to answer. I'm interested if you agree, Tom. I believe that you will. Mm-hmm. The way the Liverpool attack has been looking in recent weeks, recent months, it's pretty limp, and they are not putting 2, 3, 4 goals, save that match against Watford, in which all of the defenders, which even further proves the point that I'm going to try to make here, all the points were coming from the defenders. I just don't think it's a sure enough bet to double up on the attack with Salah and Mane. All of the consistent points, and this has been the case all season, Robertson, VVD, Trent, those are the guys that you want to focus. I'm all in on a double up. And even Stephen Toomey on our Slack mentioned, why not a triple up on Liverpool defenders if Salah is not really doing the business, or even Mane is doing the business? So before I get your thoughts on double up, triple up on the Liverpool defense, it plays into this Salah question. 13.5 million for this wildly premium midfielder who just had another blank against Everton. And He resembled how I look when I play FIFA Online Pros, where I am trying to size up a shot from, you know, the D at the top of the box every time I get the ball. I will blow by one, two defenders, and I will always get tackled right before I get my shot off in FIFA. And that's basically the world in which Salah is right now. He is the FIFA player always getting tackled before he's able to get the shot off. So Delhi for Heisman asks, Salah, enough said. What do you think?
So it's not happening for him right now, okay? I mean, he had a tough game today against Everton, their local rivals. But you know what? He could have easily have scored a hat-trick in that game. It was one of those games where his touch was just a little bit heavy. He had one curling shot in the first half that if he starts it a yard and a half further wide of Pickford, then that goes in the top corner. He's not invisible in these games. His touch isn't great right now. I can't imagine his confidence is sky high, but he is still an integral part of that attack. And in terms of Stephen's question about maybe trebling up at the back, I do quite like the creativity of that, but I think you're removing a strongly captained asset within 31 as well. So I'd be sort of hesitant to advocate for doing that. I also sort of think we need to bear in mind that game weeks 16 through 23, this is the guy who scored 21, 2, 12, 12, 12, 2, 11, and 15. It's just remarkable returns of really heavy scoring points. And for us to collectively forget about this guy when they're going for the league, I think is folly. Yeah. You know, they play Burnley at home in their next game after a week's rest. So going into game week 30, you're already going to be starting to think he's another captaincy option. They'll look to bounce back. Burnley have not been defending super well in their last two game weeks. They've then got Fulham, then the home game against Spurs, tough one, and then away in Southampton. So if you're talking about removing Mo Salah at a time when you know that he's going to play over this double blank period, I think that's an incredible risk to take, and it's not something that I'd be doing. In terms of the defensive question you mentioned, Brandon, I definitely agree. Yeah. I thought Van Dijk was imperious today. It was one of the best centre-back performances I can remember watching live. That's no exaggeration.
Look up imperious in the dictionary. Google it. There will be numerous pictures of Virgil van Dijk. It's the perfect word to describe him.
Isn't it, though? He was magnificent today. And Carragher said in the post-match comments, he said, and you know, he's about as staunch a Liverpool fan as there is. He said, in his opinion, Liverpool lose that game if Van Dijk wasn't playing. And for him to say that would have been, a tough thing for him to sort of admit to. But that's how good he was. Yeah. Robertson's been super consistent all season. Love that guy. And Trent Alexander-Arnold, now that he's back at fit, is similarly effective. Pulled in all the bonus points.
Looked really impressive to me against Everton, most notably. It was all of his crosses against Watford, but his pace today was remarkable.
He's in a rich vein of form. He had the little period where he was out for a while. It's probably done him some good to recoup. And you know, take your pick from two of those three, I'd say, and you're going to be well set for the upcoming period.
I think we've been having the same conversation about Salah all season, and you know, we have to mention it, I think, once a month. One of the golden rules of FPL is patience, and I agree. I think the fixtures are too good, and additionally, I just don't know what I need. I don't know how this is going to sound, so correct me if I sound like a complete jerk, Tom, but I just don't know what I need all this money for. If I cash in Salah, because a lot of the options that we're sizing up for these blank game weeks are relatively affordable, it's not like I'm trying to clear out the bank so I can bring in a handful of Manchester City players right this moment.
And I think as well, if your overall rank is decent, you're defending as well, you do need to be mindful of his ownership and the fact, like we say, you will be super heavily captained. I mean, it's a relatively dull discussion that, but it is something you want to at least acknowledge when you're going into prospectively, you know, selling these type of players, that actually could harm you in that respect as well. So, I don't want to sort of forget that Salah did not have a good game today in terms of his actual output. There were two great chances, which you'd back normally he would convert. But it's not like he's invisible. You know, he's still getting these chances. Lucas Dean gave him a 40-yard sort of space today, which is normally is a recipe for dessert. Another time we'd be mocking him for that. But the fact is, yes, he didn't convert today. He easily could have done. I'm still in the hold Salah camp.
All right. So you mentioned Scotty Parker, a new appointment at Fulham. I believe that that's basically the club putting Fulham into hospice care as they prepare for their their championship campaign next season. The other big managerial appointment was at Leicester City. Brendan Rodgers is back in the Premier League. What a lovely character, a weird, lovely character. So now Leicester City, for me, it's kind of hilarious how this question or the idea of Leicester ahead of these blanks is completely turned on his head. Instead of all the talk being about Leicester defenders like Maguire or Pereira, I am now only focused on Leicester's attacking assets. It's a little bit like what I was saying about Chelsea. Rodgers is, of course, known for his high-flying Liverpool days, what he did at Swansea, that free-flowing pass-and-move football. Suddenly, Maddison and Vardy, assuming that he doesn't have a severe concussion after that match today, these are now the guys that I'm way more interested in than their defenders.
Definitely.
So Dave from Burnley, he chimes in and he asks, Leicester defender, yes or no? They're using wingbacks now that Rodgers is appointed. Is it a go or no-go Leicester defense, Tom?
So I think the difficulty that we've got is if you just look at, I mentioned at the beginning of this show that you guys have always talked about the key aspects of fantasy league in terms of what render you points, right? Clean sheets is one of those metrics, right? If you just look at that, Leicester are 7 in 29, right? It's terrible. It's just, if you're looking at just at the defensive output, it's just not good enough. That said, Dave, who's a very good manager himself, he'll be aware that, and makes reference to the fact that they do deploy their fullbacks, Pereira and Chilwell, really high up the pitch. So Pereira's 5'4", and Chilwell's a little cheaper at 5.0. I think they're nicely priced, but I think you kind of need to accept that this Leicester defense, for whatever reason, does have mistakes in it, and it is conceding goals. I actually like the composition quite a lot of Schmeichel, Evans, Chilwell, Pereira, Morgan.
The problem is you put Wes Morgan in the
Wes
middle
Morgan
there.
His retirement parade's gone on too long, hasn't it?
Yes.
So for whatever reason, they're still conceding too many goals. And that for me is the metric you should look at with a clean sheet, with the defenders rather. But having said that, Pereira and Joel do both play high up the pitch. So I like both of them. They're just a little bit awkwardly priced. 5.4, like you just made. How can you shoehorn that into your defense when you're already talking about doubling up with Leicester and then using one of the cheaper options that you've got elsewhere with Newcastle or West Ham, for example, for 31. So with Leicester playing Fulham in 30, I would be more excited about bringing in, like you say, Vardy, if he's past fit after his nasty bang on the head in the game that's just gone today. Or Harvey Barnes. But the only thing is with Harvey Barnes, he's priced 5.5, is we're still not totally sure what Rodgers thinks of his team in terms of who he wants to start ongoing. We've only got a sample of one, and he was subbed just after an hour today. So you'd be a little bit wary, especially as with a blank game week, what you're really focusing on is trying to identify the players who you're most confident will start. Yeah.
It's a good point. Yeah, the chief goal is to target a player who will play, and because if they don't, then you've kind of missed the boat.
That's true.
It's funny, talking about the wingers on Leicester, I have moved into this conservative consolidation. I know the last defender I brought in was Virgil van Dijk, and before that I brought in Lascelles. So I'm even though I have gotten two goals from VVD since I brought him in, the idea wasn't I was going to get attacking returns. I was just hopeful to get those starts. But
yeah,
I completely agree. If you're looking at, maybe I even prioritize Leicester defense over Chelsea defense, just given the incredible fixture run that Leicester has through the rest of the season.
Do.
So if it is, maybe you're on wild card, maybe you're doing a free hit in an odd week. I think Leicester defense still, despite what we've said, is worth a look, but you mentioned Harvey Barnes there, but no James Maddison. James Maddison is not your cup of tea.
He definitely is. I like, it's kind of in the same breath. So Maddison at least played 90 today. He's a lot priced a lot higher. I think he's 6.6 million. I think that's right. I'm not totally sure about that. So you know, if you've got the change to do that, then he's going to be a more secure option, I'd say, based again on one sample and kind of player profile as well. Like Madison's been signed for big, well, relatively big money in the closed season. It's had a good season, I think. I think there's still doubts, aren't there, in terms of whether or not he's another Tadic. I think I've heard that comparison mentioned a few times, but that might be a little harsh so far. We'll see. But and one of these questions, yeah. I know you mentioned, Brandon, was about midfield options for this blank game week, right. 31 and the 30 that leads into it as well. So one of Josh's favourite players that I remember he mentioned on your guys' preview of the season is David Brooks. So he's been out injured for a little while.
It's
held
pronounced
him.
David, Tom.
Oh, I said David, my bad, Brooks, my bad. Yes. Okay, yeah. So David, he is now back. And I think he's come back a little bit quicker than Eddie Howe would have wanted. Because I think he's basically had to bring him back into the team to arrest what's been a pretty alarming run of form. I think Bournemouth are now second bottom in the form table over the last six. But that said, they've had some tough games. And he started the last game, played 74 minutes in that narrow loss to Man City, priced at just 5.0 million. He does have two double-digit returns on the season, and he averages over 5 points per 90, which I was quite surprised about. And that's actually higher than I would have guessed. And at that price, with Bournemouth's run from 30 onwards, he'd be a player I'd really would be looking to get in as a make weight for your plans for the rest of the season, kind of irrespective of what chip strategy you're deploying. I don't think you need to be attached to the strategy you and I are deploying. Bournemouth's fixtures from game week 30 onwards are away at Huddersfield, which is a great fixture. They're kind of incipient hopes that they are going to have the great revival of died a death already, I think. They've then got Newcastle at home, Leicester away, Burnley at home, and then Brighton away. So it's a great run. He's back in the team. Hopefully Callum Wilson will join him as well. So I really like that as an option. And the other was, I think you like him more than Josh from memory, Brandon, but correct me if I'm wrong, is Manuel Lanzini.
Huge fan, yep.
Yeah, cool. So, I mean, as a West Ham fan, I'm so excited to see him back in the team. I couldn't believe he actually played the 90 minutes in the win against Newcastle. I thought he'd be hooked after an hour or so for sure, but he played 90. He didn't actually return any fantasy points in that game, but the fact he's fit enough to play 90 is really encouraging for West Ham's upcoming run of games as well. And we've got Cardiff in our next, West Ham have got Cardiff, not we, I've yet to sign for them, but Cardiff away in the next game, and then Huddersfield at home in blank game week 31. So those are two cheaper options. Lanzini 6.4 million, Brooks 5.0 million. I'd be really sort of directing the listeners to take a look at those two options for the game week. Do you share that enthusiasm for Lanzini, or do you think it's a bit premature with all the other midfield options?
I do, and I think he's looked bright since coming back, and it leads to another question that is more immediate for a lot of FPL managers. FPL Strong brings this up. Felipe Anderson stinks. That is one man's opinion. he certainly has not posted any FPL returns in some time, and it seems like Lanzini coming back and the way they've played recently is Anderson is really stuck to the touchline there, and he's not getting in and becoming active in the attack as he had been earlier in the season.
He's regressed, hasn't he?
Yeah, but so this, I think this is what I want to ask you is, you're in this really tough situation ahead of the blanks where every transfer counts. You have a player like Felipe Anderson where the eye test tells you he's wildly out of FPL form. I don't think that he is in bad form, you know, in reality. I think he's still looking like one of their brighter players. But do you think it's worth, if you have Felipe Anderson now, do you think it's worth exploring another option, even though he does play in the blanks?
I think it's probably the cop-out answer will be that it's team-specific, and you'd need to see the extent to which you could justify making that kind of luxury transfer. My gut says that that's not a transfer I'd be looking to do. I think we know Felipe Anderson is a talented player. Like, he has flattered to deceive in the last couple of games for sure. And his heat map in the last game was really disappointing if you were an owner, because it was, like you say, he was, you know, the old adage of having, you know, paint on his boots sort of thing. He was right on the wing, but also back from the halfway line as well. It was kind of a wing back type heat map that you'd expect. That said, I think I'd probably still hold. I think the fact that, like I just mentioned, the next two games, you'd still be hopeful, maybe not expectant any longer, but still hopeful that he could return. And I don't think I'd be looking to shift him out for another 31 player. I think they'll probably be more likely to be some other area in your team that would be better focused on, is my gut feeling. What do you think?
Well, what I want to talk about is, now that Josh isn't here, it's just you and me, Tom. I can finally talk about Lucas Fabianski, and he is the one player that I truly love for West Ham, and just a wonderful shot stopper. And I'm only kind of looking at targets in the very short term, and it's Huddersfield for West Ham in game week 31. I think Fabianski is probably one of the two frees that I'm going to take over the next weeks, because I don't have a decent goalkeeper at the moment, and he's sub 5 million. I think it's worth a try with him.
Definitely. You go for it. Don't listen to Josh. Don't listen to Josh. He's got this wrong. I think in Josh's defense, West Ham have conceded. I wanted a little quiz for you, Brandon. So West Ham have conceded. This will be Josh's case, right? So the case for against Lucas Fabianski, they've conceded, or kept rather, 5 clean sheets this season, West Ham, which is just pathetic. Which is better than just Fulham, who have 2, but we won't focus on that. So if I was to ask you, Brandon, which 2 Premier League teams other than West Ham have 5 clean sheets for the season so far, which 2 would you guess?
Oh, it's a good question.
You get 3 guesses to name these 2 teams.
Okay, I think I was just looking up Leicester, and I think they have 7, so it's not them. Mm-hmm. Is it, I'm going to guess, Bournemouth or Newcastle?
Okay, so Bournemouth have got 7 as well, so it's not them. They're terrible defense as well, but 2 better. Newcastle have got 9, actually, which is higher than I would have guessed. Okay. I guess maybe because their home form recently has been so much better. But no. Okay, so...
Cardiff. Is it Cardiff?
It's not Cardiff. You're naming it. Cardiff also have 7. But it's actually... I mean, Huddersfield is one I think people would... Okay, we kind of accept that. So Huddersfield have got 5 clean sheets so far for the season. Arsenal is the other one. Couldn't believe that. Arsenal, Huddersfield and West Ham, 5 clean sheets for the campaign. But in the defense for Lucas Fabianski, so in spite of that, 5 clean sheets only for the season, he's still the 5th best goalkeeper in terms of points accrued in FPL over the season. Yes. And that's ultimately the game we're playing. So he's doing something right, you know, and at that price, 4.7 million, he's playing, like we said, we mentioned the Cardiff game in 30, which is, you know, a fine fixture. But you've also got the fact that he's playing Huddersfield, who I think I'm right in saying they have not scored in 13. No, I think it's that they've scored in 13 games of their 29 so far this season. So if he can't keep a clean sheet in that game, then fine. We'll revisit this topic. But no, I really like the pick. Right. He would be my free hit goalkeeper choice, I think. I think I'd go that far.
Fantastic. We further to defense, we had a question from FPL Devotee, who asked about the best sub 4.5 defender for game weeks 31 and 33. I think the answer is very simple here, and you hinted at it earlier, Tom. It's just a simple matter of find someone who is that price point who will play. Yeah. Beyond that, I don't care. And so, I just don't think it's going to be. You're looking at teams who have that poor form, like Huddersfield and Fulham. Burnley, even though they have a really stout goalkeeper in Tom Heaton, you're not going to plan to get a lot out of these guys. Yeah. Just make sure they start. That's my only thing that I would say to that question.
What do you think? What do you think, Brandon? We just mentioned about the West Ham defense, 5 clean sheets on the season, terrible, right? But Huddersfield are about as impotent as a team as you can imagine in the league. So what do you think about Declan Rice, who's on the game as a defender? He's clearly playing in defensive central midfield. But I know the question was about sub 4.5 million. Let's allow the leeway of he is 4.5 million. What do you think about him as a make weight for the your planning? You think there's any mileage there?
Definitely. It's that you'd classify it in the punt column, but it would be a fun punt. And he is like Eric Dyer was classed as a defender once upon a time. And he was a similar player in that he was classed as a defender, but he would play in that sort of defensive midfield role and often get forward, or whether it's on set pieces or whether to play the ball into the attack through the midfield. So, you know, if you felt good about bringing in Eric Dyer, I'd feel the same about Declan Rice.
For sure. I mean, he's got those two 15 pointers, game weeks 22 and the one just gone 29. You know, he does seem to pop up occasionally with a chance, and Snodgrass's delivery is great at set plays. And he seems to be a threat there. Like, I'm not saying he's guaranteed to haul you a load of attacking returns, cause he plays in front of the back four, but I do quite like the shout based pretty much only on the opposition of Huddersfield in 31 and, like we say, Cardiff in 30. So yeah, a punt, but I was interested to see how you felt about it, because I haven't heard him sort of talked about at all in any FPL conversations I've seen on the net.
I think maybe a lot of people just don't even realize that he is classified as a defender. And the golden FPL rule that Josh will often point out is if you, and I think we learned this one from Peter Blake, is if a player is playing farther forward than they're classed in FPL, all the better. Like, the closer they get to the goal as compared to their FPL position, that's great. So Rice is classified there. Let's quickly touch upon Newcastle before we get to our lightning round. But I mentioned earlier that their defense is among my more preferred defenses looking at these short-term game weeks. Though Yedlin kind of on the outside looking and Shar, as you mentioned, now one yellow away from suspension. Of course, you can roll out the whole narrative about Diego Costa and all the goals that he scored when he was one yellow away from suspension. Lascelles is emerging as one of the great picks going into game week 31.
Yeah.
He is the most nailed defender for Newcastle. Mankio will rotate with Yedlin. So now that he also has a terrible head injury, you do wonder if Yedlin will get a look in this weekend. It's uncertain.
It's really tricky because Newcastle's home form is the same in terms of win-losses as Man City's and Arsenal's over the last four. So they all three of those teams have won the last four home games. So they're in terrific form at home. Yedlin, I just feel really unlucky that he's been dropped and Mankio's come in. Shah is, you know, that was a really poor transfer from me then. I'm annoyed because I knew about the eight yellow cards, which was now become nine and could easily become 10 before I want to field him in the game week 31 fixture. But I still do like the defensive unit. It's one of the things you guys on Always Cheating sort of made me think differently as a manager. And I think it's because of your US background and that you think about things of offense versus defense, right? That's not necessarily how we in the United Kingdom kind of sort of think about football. That made me think, actually, that's really important because Newcastle, for example, managed by great tactician in Rafael Benitez, he's not got the best defensive personnel there, but they're still effective. It does make a difference. And I think having a player or two players even from this Newcastle team for their upcoming run going into the 30 and 31 is definitely recommended. Like the Everton home game, we just mentioned the great home form Newcastle have. To be fair to Everton, they have bounced back well. I think their 17-day break between that led them into game week 28 has really seemed to affect them. They've got back-to-back clean sheets now. So I don't think it'll be an easy game for them there. And then they've got their, but it's still, you know, it's not a bad fixture. They're not scoring a heap of goals at all. And then they're away at Bournemouth in 31. So definitely on board with the Newcastle defence. I think outside of Lascelles and Lejeune, though, I think it's got to be one of those two for me, because I think there's too many question marks around the others. And I find myself owning both of the ones which have the biggest question marks, which is disappointing.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that Rondon has quickly fallen away from the conversation. Manado also on Twitter mentions Almiron, who has looked really bright, but he's blanked three games in a row.
He's
new to the squad. I think he looks really bright. This is a situation like you have with Felipe Anderson, where if you have Almiron, if you have Rondon, you have to hold these guys
and ride them
through these blanks and see what happens.
It's interesting. So I mean, the West Ham game was last on Match of the Day. Well, there wasn't a heap of highlights available, but Almiron didn't feature at all. Like I made mention to the fact I review those shows, I had to acknowledge the fact that he was his non-appearance, if you like, in the highlights, because there was a bit of momentum building there. I saw his debut and thought he looked terrific. I thought Burnley actually showed how to defend him quite well, in that they defend quite deep, don't they, Burnley? So there was just no space in behind, and he is rapid, Almiron, but he just couldn't exploit that space because there was none. So maybe teams are already starting to work out that this guy is a threat on the counter, but if we set up in a way that doesn't allow them to play like that, then he's actually going to be rendered pretty ineffective. It's a bit of a guess as a sample size of three, but signs weren't that encouraging for Almiron, I would say, based on the last two games. But like you say, if you've got him, you've got to hold him at this point, I would say.
Yeah. All right. I have a tricky question for you, Tom.
Sure.
FPL Llama writes in and says, this is a common problem. Lots of value built up in players who you would look to move out ahead of the blanks. We're talking about Wolves players like Jimenez and Doherty, Pogba and Rashford from Manchester United. We got these guys when they were bargain price. We've accumulated a lot of value. Strategy, if we're looking at the whole free hit 32, wildcard 34, says we're going to have to dump one, two, maybe three of these guys. Is that the definition of insanity? I tend to think that I've built up enough team value that I can buy the guys that I want back. I think for Manchester United, Pogba and Rashford will actually be crucial, at least looking at game weeks 37 and 38, when it could be an absolute goal festival with Huddersfield and Cardiff, and United still probably trying to solidify that top four status. And Jimenez, as I mentioned earlier, ascending to his own personal sainthood this season in FPL. Do you have any guys in your squad that you're kind of hemming and hawing about, do I really have to sell these guys for such a short span of time?
Heaps. It's a real concern because I was fortunate enough to get on the bandwagon early with a lot of these guys. So bought Jimenez at 5.7. He's now 6.9 mil. So, you know, I'd get a selling value of 6.3 for him. So I'd have to find 0.6 to rebuy him. It's kind of comparable for, it's not quite as bad for Pogba. It's 8.5. I bought him. He's now at 9. Rashford, 7.0, and he's now at 7.7. So you just need to be mindful of this. I would say the free hit bothers me less because obviously you're coming back to those players if you transfer them out for that period, right? I think I'm right in saying.
Yes.
The wild card is, like you say, that's the point where you need to be mindful of the fact that if you've got any intention of rebuying those players, then you need to accommodate, that you need to have that slush fund available either in the bank or in players that you're happy to sell down the road. I'm trying not to get myself too fixated on it though, Brandon, because we've got, like say, a lot of the players that we've talked about on this podcast over the last however long, they've been players of decent value. Like we mentioned Lanzini, we mentioned Brooks, the Newcastle defense, some of the Leicester midfield, etc. These are teams that have prolonged set of great fixtures. So I don't see the money side of things going to be too difficult other than Chelsea. And we've talked a little bit about Chelsea having this nice run, but they also got a series of doubles upcoming that I think we're going to be wanting to double up on two pretty expensive players in Higuain and Hazard. So that I think is going to be the problem. We know in FPL you can't have them all, but I would say just be mindful when you sell these players. Take a look on the list view on the website if you're using the desktop, just to understand what the current price is and what your sale price is, to make sure that you're not shooting yourself in the foot when you come to sell these guys.
Right. All right. That's a perfect point for us to break, Tom. And we're going to come back and have the classic always cheating lightning round and our game week 30 preview. Tom and I are going to talk about our bus teams, our captain options and transfer targets, et cetera. So we'll be back in a minute. All right, let's take a minute to talk about our friends at Starting 11, the live Premier League fantasy app that you can play for free or cash prizes. Starting 11 is available now for your iPhone or Android device. Any day in which there are two or more Premier League matches, pick your best 11-man squad. No budgetary restrictions. Wait till those team sheets come out and adjust your squad at that point. You also get three live in-game substitutions that you can make on the fly based on what you see going on the pitch. Join thousands of players worldwide competing in the English Premier League contest for cash and for pride. On the iOS, on your iPhones, cash games are now live in the UK, US, Canada, and Germany. If you're on an Android device, you can play cash games in the UK, or just pick up the app and play for free wherever you are. Download the app today. Just visit Apple's App Store or the Google Play Store, or visit starting11.io for more details. Also, the website starting11.io has helpful video tutorials on how you can get the most out of the app. If you just want a sneak preview of what's involved, it's really a beautiful interface. Once you load the app on your phone, the kits all have a beautiful sheen to them, nice flat color. It's very appealing to the eye. So Starting 11, the advice to you, don't waste money gambling on things you don't understand. But what I do understand is Fantasy Premier League. So we can participate in that game with some degree of confidence. So Starting 11, check it out.
Brandon, we're back. And we are going to do the lightning round now. Now, I've been listening to Always Cheating for a number of years. And just to make sure I've got this clear, the lightning round is questions, and you and I can't go more than 30 seconds with our answers. Like, that's just the fact. It never deviates from that, does it?
Yeah, that's a good point, Tom. And I'd be afraid if this was the first episode in which we went longer than 30 seconds on one of our answers. Yeah. I wouldn't want you to carry that weight around for the rest of your life. I mean, you would be blackballed from the Always Cheating community.
I will do
so
my
let's,
best, yeah.
Let's make a point to keep these under 30
Absolutely,
seconds.
We will do that one. We'll do it in the right way. Okay, so the first question comes from Zoltan Vargo, and he is asking, who would you prioritize to get for game week 30, Hazard for Son or Higuain for Rashford? Who do you think?
It's a very good question. I think I like them both. Obviously, I do, because I've brought them both in ahead of game week 30. If I do give you a sneak preview of my bus team, I have the armband on Gonzalo Higuain.
Wow.
So I feel like he's my guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is trying to read the cosmic tea leaves, but Lukaku putting in the great performance that he did against Southampton. Is he pushing Rashford a little out onto the wing if he gets to keep that spot and downgrading Rashford's FPL potential?
It's really interesting you mentioned that, actually, because a friend of mine actually went to the game, the Saints game up at Old Trafford, and I asked him about where Lukaku played in that one. And he said he sort of started centrally, but he drifts out to the right as well, which is not where you kind of intuitively expect a guy of Lukaku's stature to feature, but he's really effective there. And Rashford,
he's put in some really nice crosses.
He has,
it's
weird.
Over the last season, from
definitely.
The right.
Mm-hmm. He's finding some form there. I just think it's quite telling that pretty much everyone has found renewed sense of form under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, other than Alexis Sanchez. I just think his days are numbered. And like Dalot came on and played in midfield for Sanchez and looked better than him, this 19-year-old right back. Played in midfield when he came on. So I think his days are numbered at United. But Lukaku looks great in terms of what it means for Rashford. Rashford was unlucky not to score in that game. I'd still think
he did have a few opportunities.
Yeah,
it's true. Yeah.
The header that he put wide was the one he'll be most upset about. But I think Higuain or Hazard are both great options here. I think I'm intrigued about that captaincy choice, Brandon. That's a really interesting one, because when we talk about game week 30, there's so many options. So that's an exciting choice you've gone for.
We have, I think we have a couple questions about Kane coming up, and we can lump Sun into those questions. Yeah. So let's put a pin in that conversation.
Yeah, of course. It goes on. So Carl at FPL Opinion has asked a bit of a two-prong question here. Is Kane killing Spurs? Gosh. Plus what to do with, what to do with Son? Yeah, difficult one, right?
It is. I'm not sure that Kane is actually killing Spurs, though Spurs collectively may be killing themselves. They have looked poor-ish, I mean, by relatively speaking, yeah. I mean, by their standards. Kane, I don't think Kane himself is killing the team. I think he has looked decent since coming quickly back from injury. The issue is just generally, if we have all these other options that we're talking about, I mean, even now that we're talking about Chelsea players and Spurs, we can even postpone that conversation because they do have the blanks coming up. So if you're going into chip theory, then you don't even have to worry about Spurs. And that's maybe you can think about offloading them. If you don't have your chips, then I think you just have to move your thinking away from Spurs and toward Manchester City and still Liverpool. I think those are the teams that are putting up the best odds of FPL points. So I'm just kind of out on Spurs generally.
I think you have to be, don't you? Kane, what is he, 12.4 million? You can't keep this guy out of the FPL headlines, though. He's got, what, I think it's 8, 1, and 7 points since his return from injury, right? But he makes all of the stories. He has the penalty that he notches in the North London Derby, had that kind of ongoing battle with David Luiz. Looks sharp to me, looks fit. I think it's pretty harsh to say he's the reason for Spurs' decline in form. I actually think that they might finally be seeing the results of some fatigue for Son, personally. I think I've been surprised how well he's managed to keep it together after all of that football he's played over the summer and then the beginning of the season when he had double international duty and what have you. So with Spurs' fixtures of, you know, it's not a bad fixture, I guess, in 30 away at Southampton, although actually Saints were really good in that game against Man United, the aforementioned game against Man United. So I think that's a tough game away down at St Mary's. Then they've got a blank, and then they're away at Liverpool. And then even the game after, at the Birmingham game, that could be a blank as well, depending on how the FA Cup plays out. So I think you're right, Brandon. You've got to stay away from Spurs, and I think you would be looking to move their assets out.
The hard decision is going to be wild card in 34. Spurs have a home fixture against Huddersfield, and then Spurs tend to finish the season strong. They have West Ham, Bournemouth, and Everton. Harry Kane will be talked about again on this podcast, I guarantee it.
As much as Phil Billing has been, that's the barometer is...
Well, you know.
is the Phil Billing barometer.
If we go to the Phil Billing applause-o-meter, Kane is still in the red zone.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Okay, so next question. So Bryn Stewart asks, should Rashford or Aubameyang be moved to fund Aguero or Kane? I found this a really interesting question, actually, when we were looking at this one, because I don't know what are your thoughts about Aubameyang. I know we just talked a little bit about Kane.
I guess to be brief, you know, we're sticking to 30 seconds here, right, Tom?
Brief,
I think I'm kind of done with Arsenal for the moment. I still generally like Aubameyang as a player, and I don't think Arsenal are out of form per se. I think they brought a really decent match to Spurs over the weekend. Yeah. But there's just some troubling rotation issues with the Europa campaign that Emery is waging. And, you know, you're talking about Aguero and then Kane as alternates. There are great options that are coming to the fore that we should be talking about over Aubameyang. I think we can justify that. So as far as Aubs goes, that's a pass for me. We're moving on.
His minutes has really diminished, haven't they? I looked and it's in the last four. I know he had the injury, but, you know, 15 minutes, 70 minutes, 34 minutes. It does feel like he's, at the moment, he's playing second fiddle to Lacazette. And you'd understand I'd be looking to move away from him, I guess, if you're an owner, and kind of surprising that people haven't already. But surely you'd be looking more at Higuain, as we've been talking about already, rather than Aguero or Kane.
It's an interesting potential double for Arsenal in game week 35 with Crystal Palace and Wolverhampton. Mm-hmm. So if that comes to be, you know, going back to what I was saying about wild card in 34, you know, that could be a make or break decision, whether Definitely. You decide to go Aguero, Kane, Aubameyang. But I guess, yeah, again, let's table that for our wild card talk.
Cool. So Ryan asks, I need a third attacker, and Crystal Palace attack looks very, very good at the moment. So Zaha or Batshuayi? I think it's a really interesting question. They did look great against Burnley, I thought. I thought they looked like a really cohesive unit attacking wise.
And Zaha, his goal to finish that wonderful performance, he just put the Burnley defenders right on their butts.
Yeah, a few times.
I generally, like, I'm not ever sure how I feel about Zaha. There's just something about him that doesn't appeal to me. But, you know, some theory that is talked about in FPL circles is about who's the talisman of the team. Batshuayi is new. He has something to prove. But Zaha is really the talisman of that team. And I think if Crystal Palace will be doing well, so will Zaha. The price difference isn't big enough. It's like something in the realm of 0.2 million between the two of them. So, yeah, I do favor Zaha here. What do you think?
The annoying thing about it is that Zaha's now a forward. It's like if he was a midfielder, it would be so much easier to advocate for him with the additional point for a clean sheet and for goals scored, etc. But the fact is they're both on forward on the game. So there's nothing to discern between them in that respect. I loved how Batshuayi scored that goal against Burnley on the weekend. That first time finish was kind of instinctive, and I think that bodes well. But like you say, Zaha is the talisman. He's more likely, I think, to win penalties, etc. I thought he had a really good understanding down either flank, actually, with Wan-Bissaka coming back into the team. That seems to work so much better. I think he's a class act.
Yeah.
Jeff Schlupp playing ahead of Patrick Van Aanholt on the left as well. That's really dynamic as well, the two of those players interchanging as well. So I think I probably favour Zaha if you can afford that 0.2 difference, which you should be able to do. But I quite like both picks, to be honest. They've got decent fixture in 30.
Double Palace. I love this.
Yeah, I mean, either one. I don't know. I'd advocate for the double, but Brighton, Brighton at home in 30.
I'm trying to stir up some controversy here, Tom.
Well, you know what? Then go for it. I'm all in. Let's do it. I think.
Sorry. What was the actual point you were going to make, though?
I've forgotten. No, I think it was Brighton at home in 30 is a really good fixture. Brighton are in pretty wretched form. I know they scraped their 1-0 victory against Huddersfield, but they're not playing very well at the moment, especially away from home. They do them blank in 31, so you'd need to be mindful of that. Then they've got the Huddersfield home game in 32, and then they're scheduled to play Newcastle in 33. So it's a nice run for them, but you do need to be mindful that they wouldn't have a fixture in 31. Both fine picks, I'd say. I really like them as differential punts.
Okay, perfect. 29 seconds, right under the right under the marker.
That one was close.
it was close, yeah. What's next?
So I think we've kind of probably covered this a bit already. So Martin asks, I need a replacement for Jota at a similar price. Who would you recommend? So I think I've already said I really like David Brooks and Lanzini were the two in that camp. But is there anyone else that you'd be looking at?
Well, I mentioned him last week just from an affordability standpoint is Isaac Hayden on Newcastle. Mm-hmm. 4.3, he seems to have locked a starting role down, and he has some goal involvement for Newcastle over the last month. So if you're looking to play the blanks and say you even have you need to free up a million to move elsewhere, I think Isaac Hayden is an interesting one. Burnley, you know, this is the bottom of the barrel, but Westwood's assist to Ashley Barnes, I thought, was really wonderful.
Yeah.
A TAA level cross into the box. Or maybe I should describe him more as a Mark Albrighton type of a player, Ashley Westwood.
I'm a secret fan.
Did the two of them play together on Aston Villa?
I'm a secret fan of Ashley Westwood. I think he's really underrated.
Yeah.
He always looks quite creative. I think in a more progressive team, he maybe would look a little bit more effective. But no, I like the Westwood shout. Hayden, I think, has got is a more solid shout this week than it was last week, because Longstaff has now picked up an injury. So there are a few central midfielders in the Newcastle setup who could come in and threaten that, like Shelvey's back in contention, etc. So you know, there's always that doubt, and we've mentioned before, like, you want your players to be, in inverted commas, assured of playing. But I think Hayden's more likely to have that spot now that Longstaff's picked up a untimely injury. But yeah, no, I like that. And like I say, Brooks and Lanzini as well, I'd say to Martin. So yeah, that would be that.
If there's any report that Callum Wilson will get back for game week 31, that would make the Brooks pick
so much
even more appealing to me. I think Bournemouth are just lacking some attacking impetus right now.
Well, I think that's a fair point, because they didn't manage a shot, did they, against Man City in the whole match, which is...
You know, they were the first home team to not register a single shot all season.
Yeah.
I mean, I did think they acquitted themselves really well against Manchester City. Nathan Ake, who for a lot of this season, I think he's been a bit of a joke, played. He was imperious in that match. I thought he was outstanding.
I'm kind of annoyed.
It's just good to
because
go on.
You guys have made me laugh hysterically about when you criticize the Bournemouth defense as much as you have done. Like I've fallen about laughing about it, and it's perfectly apt. But they actually defended really well in the game week that I've come on to talk about. So I'm really annoyed about that. But I hear you. I think they kind of
go on.
Well, I was saying that they kind of had to, because they were decimated, weren't they, in the game before away at Arsenal, weren't they? I think it was away at Arsenal.
Yeah, and then they had some sort of makeshift back line that no one really knew what to make heads or tails of, but somehow they made it work.
They made it work, that's right. They're, you know, good on them. They managed to get it done. So, but no, from an attacking perspective, I definitely agree. You'd want Wilson to be available for sure to make the Brooks pick a little bit more exciting.
Perhaps then, in fairness to Brooks, it was his first game back against Manchester City. Not the best attacking fixtures, so the eye test may be a little deceiving.
Just come back from injury, hasn't he? So, you know, and he'll have the game week 30 game to, you know, hopefully get himself a little bit up to shape. Yeah. So last question is AJ on the Slack channel, which you get access to if you're a Patreon pledger. So he's asked a bit of an interesting question. He says, what is your go-to route for casual clothing? He says, I'm pegging Brandon as an urban outfitters guy who would like to buy more from thrift stores, but just never really likes what he sees. Tom, on the other hand, more of a top man Zara guy who doesn't like to admit 90% of his best finds over the last 15 years have come from H&M. So that's very specific.
Yeah, it is very specific from AJ. I feel like AJ maybe knows us better than we think he does. And it's funny how AJ mentions the thrift store shopping and not really finding anything that's appealing. When Josh and I were in London in October, we went to the Camden Market. Josh was in the market for a barber jacket, which I'm sure he's mentioned once or twice on the podcast.
It may have come up.
And we looked at so many little thrift stalls, and I didn't really find anything that appealed
there
to me.
So he's right.
That is spot on. Though Urban Outfitters, I will not buy anything. Maybe AJ thinks I'm like 10 years younger than I actually am, but I know my size at J. Crew, and I pretty much just replenish my supply of merino wool sweaters and socks from J. Crew on a 6-month basis.
Fair enough. And from my side, top man's out. Basically, I struggle to buy clothing because I'm just too damn tall. So I'm as the same height as...
You are a tall man, Tom. I met you there.
Of course, you've met me. I'm the same height as Peter Crouch. So I tend to buy all of my stuff online so that I can, you know, go to their freak sections and pick out clothing from that.
It's the tall stature befitting a mayor.
I'm not sure if it's going to land, but I'm very touched. But
we're trying to make it land.
So I think Brandon, I'm right in saying that all of those questions were done in under 30 seconds. So job well done by both of us. Should we have a quick break and then come back and do a game week 30 preview?
Yeah, let's do it. And then we're going to talk about bus teams, captains, and transfers for game week 30.
Excellent.
All right. right, Tom, we're back. Game week 30. It's kind of going to be a lost game week because, as we've done for the last hour or so, we're only really talking about game weeks 31 and beyond at this point. So let it not be forgotten. Let's take a look at our bus team. So my game week 30 squad, as I mentioned, I just had this feeling. I put the armband on Higuain. I think because it's a home match, Stamford Bridge, not going to be an easy place for Wolves to go. Ruddy in goal? What's going on there? So that actually leads me to the transfer that I'm planning to make. I will not have a playing goalkeeper in the blanks because I have Matt Ryan and Patricio. Patricio I've been looking to get rid of for a while now. So I think, as I mentioned earlier, it's Fabianski out. And then I can play Fabianski away in that Cardiff fixture.
Fabianski but, in. Fabianski in. Patricio out. Yeah.
You
got rid of him
yes,
so
yes.
fast. No, the Patricio must have been a nightmare. Yeah, I feel sorry for you guys.
Yeah. I've not been able to get that rotation right at all, particularly with Ryan and Patricio. Yeah. I feel very blessed that I got the 9-pointer for Matt Ryan this week. So yeah. So that part is working. So vice captaincy is on Mo Salah, captaincy on Higuain. I'm just feeling this Chelsea Wolves match. Maybe I could be talked into moving the armband to Hazard, but I think I just have too many emotional feelings wrapped up in that.
Yeah, I understand that.
Your eyebrow kind of raised when I initially mentioned armband on Higuain. What do you think about that?
So it's not so much about the choice of Higuain being captain. It's more the fact that I see that Man City game against Watford at home and Liverpool Burnley at home with the two sides, you know, competing for the league. I'm just going to struggle not to captain from one of those two fixtures.
Well, so talk to me about your Manchester City assets because I've sold all of mine. So I think I do agree. It's sort of out of sight, out of mind. I didn't even consider City Watford.
And
I don't have a player there.
And that's right now, like probably why I haven't considered Chelsea because I don't own any Chelsea. So one of my sort of rules, loosely adhered to rules of this season was to try and have at least two Man City players in my squad at any one time. So, and I've been pretty much upheld that throughout the season. So right now I've got Edison, as I mentioned, in goal. Not going to be captaining him, but I've also got Sergio Aguero. So, you know, they've got a week off now. They do have the Champions League following the Watford game. So, you know, there may be a bit of a temptation not to play him or what have you. So, but right now the captaincy is on Aguero, vice captaincy on Mo Salah. I would go through my team, but it's going to change by at least one, probably two. As I say, I've got these two free transfers and haven't got a whole bunch of time before 31. Son's in my team right now, but I can't see how he survives for game week 30. And it's going to be quite an important route in terms of which direction I go down for his replacement, because I could go for somebody like a Harvey Barnes or James Maddison or one of the guys we talked about in the cheaper bracket. Or what I could try and do is actually make some money elsewhere by selling someone like Marcus Rashford or Paul Pogba to free up more money, which would enable Hazard coming in. So there's two different routes I can go down. I'm trying not to think too much about it yet because a lot can change in a week. But, you know, I do see Son sadly vacating the premises pretty soon. You know, I think he needs
I'm really curious about this Arsenal-Manchester United fixture. Particularly as a Pogba and Rashford owner, I could see it as a match where Manchester United just come in and, do their thing. They're in such great form right now. And the expression on Pogba's face at the end of that Southampton match where he knew everyone else was getting the accolades and he was not on the score sheet and will be remembered for missing that penalty, not just among FPL managers. You just get this like weird feeling that he's going to come back and try and make a point. And if you want to make a point, Tom, let me point you toward Mustafi. He's a wonderful man who will gladly trip and step aside if you want to make a point about your own performance. So I don't know that I have the courage to, you know, put the armband on Pogba, but I'm thinking about that.
Yeah, it's going to be really tough to to sell Man United players right now. They're playing really well as an attacking unit, aren't they, as well? And the Arsenal defence, yeah, as we mentioned before, was it 5 clean sheets for the season? Yeah, it's going to be difficult. So yeah, we'll see what direction they're going. I actually, you know, was looking at the fixtures for game week 30, and I think that Arsenal versus Man United one, I think, is a great game in prospect. I'm really looking forward to it. But from an FPL perspective, it's probably the hardest one to call, I would say, of all of them. So if you've got your attacking assets from either team, definitely play them, I would say, because you'd expect there to be goals in that one for sure.
Well, I wish you luck in your decisions, Tom. Josh will mention, having two free transfers, it's a little bit like 2-0 being the most dangerous scoreline. Sometimes the options are too many and you can talk yourselves into some strange choices.
You can, and I have, you know, previously many times, but we'll see how it goes. I'm going to need to use them because, you know, for 31, there's some remedial work that needs to be done, but we'll see.
All right, fantastic. Tom, that will be the end of this episode of Always Cheating, but I have to thank you for coming and being a fantastic guest host for us. Come back again soon, won't you?
My absolute pleasure, anytime. Although, you know, I so like listening to you both that, you know, hopefully it's not too frequently I'm needed to step in. But no, I've really enjoyed it, and hopefully the listeners have too.
All right, I'm going to do the sign-off here. If you want to become a Patreon and support the pod, go to patreon.com/alwayscheating. Tom, you have such a wonderful, composed voice. It would be an honor to me and all of our producers if you would read off their names. Would you be so kind?
I'll give it a go. Gosh, I hear these every week, so let's give it a go. So many thanks to the following. So Mike DiPietro, Stephen Toomey, Sam Streak, Jacob Roberts, Carl Rasmus, Leanne Grayley, Chris Howell, Rafai Khan, Martin Savage, Rick Brailsford, Jim Payne, Adam Benjamin, Max Chamberlain, Brian T, Trevor Ingerson, Chris Carter, De Big Gaffer, Danny Evans, Babus Kun, Tor Furland, the talented Mr. Husby, Ben Grant, James Holland, and Matt Ritter. Thank you very much for being producers.
I couldn't help but notice the deep breath that you had to take halfway through. I mean, that's a legitimate list.
It's a lot of names. Yeah, it's a lot of names and good.
It's
on
a
the
lot
walls.
Of love, is what it is. So thanks to everyone there.
I can well understand it. Hopefully, a lot more listeners join the fun because it's worth doing. Yeah.
All right, subscribe to Always Cheating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, Acast, wherever it is that you get your podcast. If you'd be so kind, you can give us a 5-star review or follow us on Twitter at Hail Cheaters, Instagram at Hail Cheaters, Facebook.com/Always Cheating. Or if you have a lengthy message that you want to get to me or Josh or Tom for that matter, just send it to us at HailCheaters@gmail.com. For all this information and more, you can find us at alwayscheating.com. And don't forget, give Tom a follow for his Match of the Day updates and just general Premier League wisdom and knowledge at UtterlyTC. Tom, once again, thank you very much. And do you have any Always Cheating talisman that you need to hail here at the end of the episode?
It wouldn't be an episode of Always Cheating if I didn't sign off by saying, Hail Lord Sorloth.
Excellent. Mpoku forever.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.